agenda is. Okay, you can take this one. The meeting of the Senate Finance Committee will please come to order. It is Tuesday, March 27th, 2012, and we're going to begin our agenda with Senate File 1441, Senator Rosen.
Madam Chair.
Good morning, Senator Rosen.
Good morning. Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm just wondering if, since there's no quorum.
Right. We'll have to hold off a little bit on the amendments.
Okay.
And so if we could start with just an explanation of the bill.
Okay. Would you rather have me start with the Renewable Development Fund, the second bill, which is Senate File 2181? There's no amendments there. I don't know. Or you want me just stay? Okay. Don't complicate things.
We'll get members here quicker if we start calling for a quorum.
Great. Thank you, Madam Chair. Senate File 1441 is the Redevelopment Demolition Loan Program, and this is a great program. This deals with the redevelopment grant program, and we know that anywhere in the state, you go through downtowns, and there is always a blighted structure, an area that needs to have some redevelopment. And this would allow funds to be awarded to the local units of government who need to remove these blighted structures from their communities but don't have the immediate redevelopment plan for the site. The redevelopment grant program works well for sites where there is a costly detriment to site development, and the need to level the playing field between these sites and undeveloped sites exist. But there is also untapped need for assistance with demolition and other redevelopment activities when either there is no current development plan or future development visions that hinder that current blight area. And I can just go through every single one of my communities and think of, I wish that building could be torn down. I wish they had the money to tear that down. And it doesn't matter if it's in Ceylon, Minnesota, or downtown Minneapolis. There's always areas that need some help. So DEED is then developing this demolition loan program that would assist demolition activities, including interior remediation, such as asbestos abatement. And the loan parameters would be a low-interest loan at 2% for a 15-year term, interest-free for the first 2 years. The principal and interest payments start in year three if the site has not been developed. If the site is developed, the remaining principal and interest, up to 50% of the loan, could be forgiven based on development benefits and then turned into a grant. And the property buildings must be publicly owned. That's a big thing. So these development authorities include cities, counties, port authorities, housing redevelopment authorities, economic development authorities. And with me, I have Meredith Udoybach from DEED, and she can give you further explanation, Madam Chair and members.
Welcome.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. We're excited about the opportunity
Please identify yourself.
Yeah, I'm sorry. My name is Meredith Udoybach, and I'm the director of the Office of Brownfields and Redevelopment at the Department of Employment and Economic Development. Senator Rosen outlined our purpose here very well. I would say that over the last couple of years, we've been talking with communities about the need for having a loan program when they don't have these redevelopments that are immediately ready to go. We have about $18 million in projects across the state that we've identified in communities throughout greater Minnesota as well as the metro area. Our redevelopment program is oversubscribed on the grant side, and we always have these communities that will have some of the structures that need to come down but don't have the immediate development and would be willing to take out a loan and have some loan dollars to help them finance the demolition of some of the buildings that are causing concern in their community with the hopes of having private development eventually occur on that site.
Thank you. Ms. Udoybach. Now, we have the grant money, and you said that's always oversubscribed, so you have a lot more applicants for that than there is money available. And now we're developing a loan fund, but we really don't have any money to put in it at this time. That is correct, right?
Madam Chair, members of the committee, yes, that is correct. Actually, we just awarded the $2 million that the legislature gave us last week, so currently we have a zero balance. But we are still hopeful that if we can get this policy language put on the books at the point that we can get an appropriation again for the program, which is we've been lucky and thankful that we've had one. Most sessions we'll receive an appropriation. At least we'll have the ability to give out loans for some of those projects where the development is not quite ready to occur.
So do you think that at this point it would be more economically feasible for the state simply to do the loans instead of the grants if we were to start funding this again? Would you encourage more loan money than grant money?
Madam Chair, members of the committee, these projects are somewhat difficult to do with loan dollars because the nature of a redevelopment project is there's extra costs associated with the redevelopment of these sites because you typically have old buildings on the site that needs to come down, so you have a demolition cost. The infrastructure is usually not quite up to par, and that needs to be redone. So the main purpose of the program when it was created years ago was to level the playing field between development on greenfield sites where you don't have any of those extra costs to the development, and level the playing fields to help get rid of some of the extra costs on these already developed sites that have much more costs associated with them. So loan dollars, while they're, I think, helpful in situations where communities really have a need to get rid of some of these buildings because they're causing concerns with kids getting inside the buildings, falling down, there's safety concerns, there's crime concerns in the community. I think at some point they're willing to get loan dollars if they don't have any other financing to do that, but to have the whole entire program be more of a loan situation than a grant situation, I think would be very hurtful to the program. I don't think that would get rid of that extra cost in the purpose of the program to begin with. The grant dollars are necessary to help level that playing field.
I'd like to note that we do have a quorum present. So, Senator Rosen, did you have an amendment?
I did, Madam Chair. I have the A12-0838 amendment.
We have it as the A2 amendment, members.
Madam Chair, basically this was brought up in the Jobs Committee that the account is deposited in this special revenue fund. So
okay.
That would like to make that change.
Would someone, Senator Ingebrigtsen moves the A2 amendment. Are there any questions about it? If not, all in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, nay. The motion does prevail. The amendment is adopted. Senator Rosen.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I know that this would be general fund dollars, but I think it's very important for us when we're talking about jobs, we're talking about the health of our communities to be competitive. And I know down in Iowa, which I live very close to, they have been spending a tremendous amount of money, and I think it's probably from their casinos, to tell you the truth, but they have been investing in these small towns, fixing up their downtowns. These small communities are cute now. And I know I said this to Ms. Udorbach in the Jobs Committee, but it just kills me to have Iowa trumping us when it comes to taking care of their small communities and making it appealing. And so people that do want to create jobs or stay there, they can still attract people coming in. So I think this is very important. And like I said, I know there's every one of us can go through our small communities or through the communities that we serve and say, even in Senator Bonhoff's community, I'm sure there's places that need to be taken care of that maybe don't have a redevelopment plan at that point, but they're dangerous, they're an eyesore, and they do need to be taken care of. So I'd appreciate your consideration on this bill and this fund.
Senator Stump.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Are we working off of the Senate File 1441?
Correct.
And the amendment that we just added, the A2 amendment, says page 2, line 7, delete other. I don't see other in that.
It's the last four.
At the very end of the line.
Oh, okay. Too early in the morning, I guess. Thank you.
Another cup of coffee. Senator Ingebrigtsen.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just a point of interest, the gambling you're talking about in Iowa, is that state run?
Senator Rosen.
I don't
Madam
know
Chair,
that.
Yes,
I should know that. I don't know. Okay. How many casinos do they have?
And then the funds go to the schools and go to economic development. They invested $55 million, Madam Chair, and Senator Ingebrigtsen, to job creation last year.
Thank you.
Madam Chair,
Rana.
I think the other question Senator Ingebrigtsen asked was how many casinos do they have that are state-run?
Senator Rosen.
Madam Chair. I was curious about that.
I'm not certain. I know there is at least three just up in the northern part of Iowa that compete very, very, very much with Minnesota. But I'm not sure what's in southern Iowa. I can get that information.
Madam Chair.
Senator Rana.
Senator Rosen, I'm interested in that information, and also if there's any in, like, the downtown Des Moines area, and do they have any tribal-run casinos as well?
Senator Rosen?
Madam Chair, I'm looking to Senator Magnus, too, for this information. We will have to get that information. Exactly. I'd hate to say something wrong.
Madam Chair, Magnus? I think there's a racino in Des Moines. Maybe Senator Langseth knows it, but I'm sure there's a racino in Des Moines. And typically the casinos in Iowa are on the river and river boats, but there is a couple up in our area, one just south of Senator Rosen in her district, and one just south of a new one just south of mine just opened in the last 10 months or so.
Three.
So there's at least a dozen. I'm thinking.
So does anyone in the audience want to testify for or against the bill? If not, Senator Ingebrigtsen moves that Senate File 1441 be recommended to pass and sent to the floor as amended.
As amended.
Any other discussion on that motion? If not, all in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed, nay. The motion does prevail. Senate File 1441 will be placed on general orders. Thank you, Senator Rosen. And now you
Madam
can
Chair.
Stay there and get new
testifiers
and go on to your next bill, Senate File 2181.
Okay. Thank you, Madam Chair, members. Senate File 2181 is before you, and this is the Renewable Development Fund Modifications Bill. If you remember last year, members, the Renewable Development Fund was frozen, basically. And that is, of course, the brokered deal to allow Xcel Energy to add additional dry cast storage units at the Prairie Island and Monticello Nuclear Reactor. And so we get a fund that actually generates about $30 million a year. So Prairie Island is assessed $50,000 a year for each casket and $350,000 at Monticello. The fund was designed to operate as a competitive bidding process overseen by the company and an advisory board. Selected projects would go before the PUC for final approval. And so while this has been very successful, we've had some very good successes with this fund. We've also had the Office of Legislative Auditors report that came out several years ago, and we're addressing those concerns, and one of them is the appropriations from the legislature. So we took the findings in the OLA report very, very serious, and what they said is basically, number one, clarify the purpose and the power of the boards that advises, adopt a single competitive process with clearer criteria, post the status of individual projects and account finances on a public website, and provide for administrative costs. We have worked very, very closely with all parties, Madam Chair and members, on this, and I believe that we've come to an agreement with everybody as far as how this fund should move forward. And I must say, if this does not pass this bill, the fund goes back to the way it was, and there would be no appropriations to the University of Minnesota. It would just be dead. So we need to really work on this. I do have the A7 amendment, Madam Chair, that would bring the bill in order.
Senator Ingebrigtsen will move the A7 amendment. Senator Rosen, would you like to explain it, please?
Sure. Absolutely, Madam Chair. Thank you. This would basically reinstate the language that required the company to pay into the fund each year the plants that are not into operation. It clarified, the A7 amendment deals with the infrastructure language. So we clarified the language And basically it says, to develop near-commercial demonstration-scale renewable electric projects or near-commercial and demonstration-scale electric infrastructure delivery projects if those delivery projects enhance the delivery of renewable electric energy. So the environmental organizations were very concerned with the Section 1, number 4. And so this would give Xcel the ability, because it would give Xcel too much ability to spend money on infrastructure projects outside the scope of renewable energy to include such things as smart grid technology. We were very careful about not trying to make special silos or designating special revenue to special projects. And so we've been saying no, 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 but we still wanted to give it enough ability to maneuver going forward. And also we dealt with the research and development, the University of Minnesota, in this amendment also. So in the past, they've received $5 million a year to spend on R&D. We did not renew that appropriation because it did not fit within the single competitive bidding process criteria of the bill. So that was one of the recommendations from OLA, too, is that there's no oversight in the University of Minnesota's dollars. So we wanted to make it transparent and accountable for the University of Minnesota and make sure that there was a clear benefit to the ratepayers going forward. So instead, we gave all the higher ed institutions the ability to apply for these multiple R&D projects at one time. And the flexibility, this flexibility will ensure the fund has a strong R&D component. And the projects are exempt from the third-party expert review that is goes to all the other projects, but instead would provide the project valuation selection within a higher ed institution or a peer review within that higher ed. But it would still have to get the PUC approval. So that's how we dealt with the University of Minnesota. I'm sure you all received some correspondence about making sure that the U of M received their $5 million appropriation. We countered back and said, we want to make sure we have accountability. We want to make sure that the ratepayers know what they're getting and that we have some transparency in those R&D projects. So with that, that's the A7 amendment that we agreed upon. Xcel is here. I know the University of Minnesota is here. I think the rest of the bill deals exactly with what the legislative auditor reported, the administrative cost. The no legislature cannot appropriate money out of this fund. It has to go through the single process.
Okay. Senator Ingebrigtsen?
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I think maybe Senator Rosen may have explained it, but that was one of the things that I received in my correspondence was the University of Minnesota and what a good program it has been. And but so to understand what this is doing is basically making it a open and transparent and a fair playing field, if you will. The Office of Legislature has requested that this be looked at the way I understand it, and you seem to be very clear about that. So is that a fair statement that you're kind of building the program off of what the legislative auditor is suggesting moving forward?
Senator Rosen.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Senator Ingebrigtsen, that's exactly right. We took this very seriously, and it was kind of the Bible or the guidebook. And I know the $5 million that was appropriated to the University of Minnesota was used very well. It was a little more broad, too, than what we wanted for electric renewable generation. So there was some we want to make sure that the R&D projects are geared towards renewable energy, electric renewable energy. And we wanted to make sure that we have some accountability, and it goes through the same process as all the other projects have to go through as far as being able to make sure that it's transparent, like you said, there's accountability, and that we're spending this ratepayers' dollars exactly the way it was designated to be.
Senator Rosen, how much money is in the fund on an annual basis?
There's approximately $30 million at this point. There's about $500 million right now in the fund. But there's REPI payments that are ongoing, renewable energy production incentives, and then the solar rebate program, Madam Chair. that we continued funding in last year's bill. So the available funding. Madam Chair, there's $11 million currently in the program right now.
Do members have any questions about the amendment? Senator Ingebrigtsen?
Again, I just want to make, thank you, Madam Chair, just want to make sure that the University of Minnesota still will be able to qualify, will be able to apply for this money. This is not just, you know, taking their money away. They, if they qualify according to the more narrow standards, qualifications, that they will qualify as well.
Madam Chair, and thank you, Senator Ingebrigtsen. Absolutely, they can qualify, and so can Minnesota State University. It was very tempting. I serve Blue Earth County and Minnesota State University, and they have some renewable energy projects that they would love to have been earmarked in this bill. And it would have been very easy to earmark the University of Minnesota or earmark some solar programs on schools or earmark a whole bunch of things. But we had to really stay tight and not create silos and not do exactly what the OLA said not to do, and that's legislate this money. This should go through the advisory group. This is a private fund. This is not public dollars. This is not state dollars. These are ratepayer dollars. So we have the obligation to set up a program to make sure that everybody can be competitive, and that's what we want to be. We want to make sure that University of Minnesota is competitive, which they are. They have great projects, but they have to go through the same process as if everybody else does. And I think if their projects are good and they develop this peer review process, they will find that it actually works very well for them too.
Senator Stumpf.
Thank you, Madam Chair. On page 2 of the of the bill, how does the
Senator Stump, could we just take the amendment first?
Oh,
I think
I'm sorry.
We're ready to put it on, unless there's someone here to testify on the amendment. If not, Senator Ingebrigtsen renews his motion that the A7 amendment be placed on the bill. All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay. The motion does prevail. The amendment is adopted. And Senator Stumpf.
When you read the clauses that restrict the use of the funds, they seem to, and maybe rightly so, tie back to the first one, to increase the market penetration within the state of renewable electric energy resources at a reasonable cost. It is restrictive in the sense of it's more aimed at the generation of electricity. So, you know, wind would qualify. I'm just wondering how, when you look at the university and the research maybe going on and newer kinds of potential that we might, let's say, hydrogen or something that might be researched, is this going to be more restrictive? Or restricting the research to something that would be strictly geared toward the electrical generation? I mean, they all seem to have that that clause which ties in the electrical generation purpose. And I realize that's where those funds come from, but in research, sometimes you don't, you're doing it on a scale that's somewhat experimental, maybe very experimental, and it might not have the goal of, let's say, mass generation, like coal-fired or wind turbines or something like that. Mm-hmm. Does that make any sense would that restrict, let's say, the research into, you know, hydrogen-powered small generation or some, you know, some other thing that mm-hmm. might happen in the future?
Senator Rosen.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Senator Stump, I don't believe so. When you listen to the University of Minnesota's testimony, they have some wonderful projects that they're moving forward. And we did keep it fairly broad, and I think the A7 amendment does allow for these specific R&D projects to go through a peer review process or project evaluation process. What we did not want to happen is that it does steer away from the purpose of the fund. Again, it's a private fund. Away from, like, transportation fuels. There's the Next Gen Energy Board that has money for those things. So we wanted to make sure that it's for energy, renewable energy, and specifically electric energy. And I know the environmental community is very much in favor of that. The auditor's report talks about how they should also make sure that those projects are not just, you know, just like a slush fund. This is not part of the University of Minnesota's budget. So this is our duty is to make sure that these funds are used for the purpose that the ratepayers are paying for. And if it's for electric energy, a lot of wonderful projects out there that we can fund. We just wanted to keep them in the state because there was many appropriations going out of the state, millions of dollars going out of the state. And we wanted to make sure that we keep focusing in on electric generation, renewable generation. And because, like I said, there's other dollars that can be used in R&D. But it's still, I think the University of Minnesota will have the ability to be competitive and competition's good, so they can go in front of this board and say, we've got these projects, they're early stage or they're late stage, this is the R&D amendment, and so it's going to be treated a little bit differently than the rest of the projects that will be going through the advisory group and then the third party review and then the PUC group. So the R&D is being treated a little more specifically because it is R&D.
Senator Rosen, Is this a straight grant program so that if one of the universities develops something and they could patent it, is that patent clear and free theirs, or does some of that come back to the funding agency?
I believe, Madam Chair, and I will look. I believe it just stays within the university. But I could be wrong. Well, Rick. Yeah.
I don't know that answer. Madam Chair, I'm Rick Evans with Xcel Energy. The way the Xcel Energy program has worked in the past is that if the grantee does not want the intellectual property, then we can acquire it. If the grantee wants the intellectual property, the terms of a contract when the grant is signed, if the grantee wants the intellectual property, then they can keep it. But if Xcel wants to use it, we're allowed to use it without charge. So the benefit of the research can come to Xcel Energy without charge, but the intellectual property belongs to the person who developed it to sell or use outside of Xcel Energy any way that they want.
Because I was wondering, because I'm trying to figure out how this comes back and benefits the ratepayer at some point. If they develop something that is going to be good for the environment and save money. I'm just wondering how that moves forward and benefits the ratepayer.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, the host of things that will be that have been investigated and will be investigated under the RDF is very broad. Developments in storage of electrical energy, which is key to using solar and wind energy, for example. The way we manage the energy in our system, there's a lot of technology that's involved in that. the size and efficiency of turbines and of solar panels and all of those kinds of things, those all come to the benefit of Xcel Energy ratepayers as they're developed. As a regulated utility, we don't do a ton of research and development. It's not part of our core business. What we do is expect other people will be developing and inventing these new things, and then when they become established, we'll be able to use them. And so the Renewable Development Fund is just another tool to help develop these kinds of technologies and inventions and what have you that eventually will come back to the benefit of Xcel Energy ratepayers.
Thank you. Is there anyone else here who wants to testify for or against the bill? Senator Higgins?
Madam Chair, I have some grammatical errors to repair.
Okay.
Starting on page 2. Line 2.27, delete the word only. And in line 2.28, insert the word only before the after. Then, line 2.30, delete the word not. And insert the word not after the word be. Line 3.17, delete the word only, and insert the word only after the word expended. Line 3.31, delete the first and insert a comma. I don't know anything about energy development, Madam Chair, but I do know punctuation and grammar. Sorry.
The hawk. On 2.28, you said that the only goes before the after, right?
Yes, at the beginning of that line there.
Okay. Does everyone follow those, or do we need them repeated?
Probably not. Nobody except Mr. Bodder and I probably need to know.
On Senator Higgins' amendment on the grammar, if there's no other questions, all in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed, nay. The amendment is adopted.
Madam Chair.
Senator Rosen.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'd just like to say a special thank you to the people that worked on this, besides Mr. Fuller and my committee assistant, Peter Mavis. The environmental community was huge, the University of Minnesota, and, of course, Xcel. All of them have been just wonderful to work with, and it was really, we worked on this all fall and had many hearings on this. So it is, it's agreement that hopefully everybody's comfortable with. I'm sure the University of Minnesota feels they'd rather have it just a $5 million appropriation, but I think in the end they will be able to actually do so many great things with the way this bill is set up for them.
Well, Senator Rosen, as a member of the Legislative Audit Commission, I appreciate that you've picked this up and followed through on the recommendations that they made in the report a couple of years ago. And, you know, sometimes they go through all that work and we don't follow through. So I'm glad you followed through and taken those recommendations and put them into statute.
And, Madam Chair, the Department of Energy Resources, too, Director Bill Grant, is very fine with this language, too. So the governor's also office, too.
Any other questions, or do we have a motion? Senator Ingebertson moves that Senate File 2181, as amended, be recommended to pass. All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. All opposed, nay. The motion does prevail. Senate File 2181, as amended, will be placed on general orders.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, members.
Thank you, Senator Rosen. Next up, we have Senator Magnus's bill, 2216, also related to energy.
Madam Chair.
Senator Ingebertson.
It's not true that the real short bills are the ones that take the most time, is it?
Oh, no.
Or is that only in judiciary? I believe that's in judiciary.
Well, Senator Ingebertson, this is a short bill. 10 lines with the description.
Well, Madam Chair.
Almost half as many witnesses, by the way.
Senator
what in the world?
Magnus.
I've got to change that then.
Two witnesses for each 5 lines.
I've got to change that, Madam Chair. I've got the A2 amendment.
Oh. We know it's too good to be true.
Almost double the size of the bill. And the reason we're doing the A2 amendment is to line it up with what's going on in the House. The House file was amended with this language, and so it would be our desire to add that language and get it in the shape we need to, so we don't have to conferee these bills if it passes.
This bill is much better shape than the House bill, isn't it?
It is now, yeah.
So, Senator Magnus, this provides additional reading material for the chairs of the energy committees, right?
Right. Well, Madam Chair and members, Senate File 2216 is a bill to fund the community energy, what do we call ourselves? Research teams.
Clean
energy research teams, I'm sorry. an ongoing program that we've had a lot of success with, and I have some testifiers here with me this morning to explain the program a little more to us. We're asking for $500,000 for this year to continue the efforts that they're doing, and so I would ask my co-testifiers to talk about their teams.
Very good. Could you identify yourself, please?
Yes, Madam Chair, members of the committee. My name is Lissa Polish. I'm the CERTS Director for the University of Minnesota Extension and the Regional Sustainable Development Partnerships. CERTS is a community-based energy program. Our mission is to connect individuals and communities to the resources they need to both identify and implement community-scale energy efficiency and renewable energy projects. Our program is a private-public partnership that kickstarted in 2003, and since that time, we've worked to build networks of community-engaged folks around the state. We have 7 regional teams around the state, and each of those has a local steering committee that's made up of local utility folks, local government people, educators, local environmental folks, and they all work together to identify what are the pressing and emerging issues around energy that are affecting their communities and how to move those ideas forward and connect people to project resources, be they financing, be they technical resources, assets within their own community to move that forward. We really focus on community capacity building and then getting energy projects going on the ground. This bill is to provide $500,000 worth of funding to keep our program going. The dollars come from the Conservation Improvement Program Research and Development Fund, also known as the SIP R&D Fund. It's $500,000 out of that fund. That fund is a $3.6 million annual assessment to all of the utilities statewide, both gas and electric. So this would be $500,000 out of that $3.6 million. It is our understanding from the Senate Energy Committee hearing 2 weeks ago that that fund currently has $5 million, and the assessment for this year has not yet taken place, so there should be ample funding in that account.
Thank you. Senator Magnus, do you want to move the A2 before
yes,
we go
I
further?
Yes, I would, Madam Chair. I'd move the A2 amendment.
Are there any questions about the amendment? It simply asks that a report be given to the chairs and the ranking minority members of the Energy Committee, I'm assuming. As to what is going on with the fund. If there's no other questions, Senator Magnus moves the A2 amendment. All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed, nay. The motion does prevail. The amendment is adopted. Questions about the bill? These two particular bills, Senator Rosens and Senator Magnus, help explain some of the lines that we see on our electric bills. Where you have the base amount, and then you have all these additional little fees on there that make up these funds, I'm assuming, because we definitely are using them for research and development, and hopefully they'll produce good results for the ratepayers. That's what I'm hoping for. Senator Ingebrigtsen.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And maybe you could go through the funding mechanism, the revenue mechanism again. It's built up to a certain point, and how much money is in that fund now, and is there a point when there gets to be a or is that not an issue? What I'm talking about is the money always spent, and if it's not always spent, is there a time when it goes back to the ratepayers?
Ms. Polish.
Madam Chair, Senator Ingebrigtsen, based on the SIP legislation, it's an annual assessment of $3.6 million. It's my understanding that there's a carry forward in that right now, because typically the Minnesota Department of Commerce Division of Energy Resources issues an RFP, a request for proposal, then those dollars are paid out as the projects are completed. So the projects that were started last year have not yet invoiced, you know, for those expenses, which is why there's $5 million in it at this point. It's my understanding, though, that it is a $3.6 million annual appropriation. There's $500,000 that is geared toward the Center for Sustainable Building Research, which works on the Buildings 2030 program for the state of Minnesota. I'm looking at energy efficiency in government buildings. That happens annually. So that would be $3.1 million every year that is remaining. But it's not my understanding that there's any point of then those dollars return back or that there's any provision for that in the legislation as it stands.
Senator Higgins?
Madam Chair, Senator Magnus, how did you come up with the $500,000? If there's all this money in there, is there more need that the communities can use? You know, if we've got the money and it doesn't go back to the ratepayers, then maybe we should use it and really get these community activities going.
Ms. Polish?
Madam Chair, Senator Higgins, the $500,000 is simply a repeat of what we had done last year.
Okay.
And again, Madam Chair and members, this is the CERTS teams coordinate the efforts for conservation for the conservation improvement programs around the state. In the case in my area, they work with the Southwest Regional Development Program. That entity is the head of that, and they have that entity has a CERTS team also, where they have various members around the communities in the 9 counties and or 12 counties, excuse me, in Southwest Minnesota, varying from county commissioners to city officials on down to folks with the utilities and everyone else, looking at areas they can. Do some work in for conservation and of the energy resources we have. And that's what they basically do.
Ms. Polish, so in this case, this fund is funded by all ratepayers, not just the big ones that have nuclear power or something. So the local co-ops, all of their members also pay into it?
Madam Chair, members of the committee, yes. It's both gas and electric utilities. So it's all electric, you know, be they an investor-owned co-op municipal utility, and then all of the gas utilities as well, including, you know, CenterPoint and Minnesota Energy Resources and all of those regulated utilities.
Has it ever been reviewed so that this could also become a competitive grant process, or at this point it's all simply allocated out to these different teams? Is that what I'm understanding?
Madam Chair, members of the committee, there is a competitive RFP that goes out of this fund. We're asking for $500,000 from that fund with not going through that competitive grant process. I mean, this is a chunk of that off of the top. So there would be $2.6 million left out of that $3.6 million annual appropriation for competitive grants for around, you know, other competitive projects around the state.
And what do you have in mind? I'm wondering why we wouldn't keep it in the competitive grant program.
Right, Madam Chair, there, I think, probably are two key points. The way the fund has been structured typically, they have a very targeted ask. You know, we want, for example, research on multifamily energy efficiency and how to, you know, improve energy efficiency in multifamily dwellings. This is an example of one of the things that was included last year. It's a very technical question in terms of there's an owner and then there's an occupant, but they don't, you know, the occupants don't own and the owners don't occupy. So there's sort of a disincentive for energy efficiency. So this was a very technical piece. Part of what CERTS brings, this program that we have, is a network of people who can then help with those research questions. We've connected lots of utilities, lots of building owners, lots of residents to tap into that research project. But there isn't a mechanism to have the core funding for this broad community-based network of teams to then have that robust capacity on the ground without some sort of base funding, some sort of core funding. We have other funding that we bring from federal dollars to foundation dollars, local dollars that fund our effort. But this is for the core part of what CERTS is. And because the RFP typically asks for very technical, specific technical pieces, it the broad-based nature of what we do through CERTS isn't something that would typically be included in the RFP portion of it, because it's not just technical, it's much more sort of programmatic, relational.
So would this be more administrative money then, just to keep the core functioning?
Madam Chair, members of the committee, we do seed grants, you know, more local projects where we try to seed efforts between, you know, $2,000 and $5,000. I think to describe it as administrative, we do much more programmatic work than that. You know, we also run certified energy efficiency campaigns where we're helping people, businesses, for example, take advantage of sort of no-brainer energy efficiency technologies. We do regional meetings where we're convening, so I guess that could be sort of administrative-y. I mean, where you're trying to get people together and better understand an issue, be educated about it, and be able to have the tools to make those decisions moving forward.
Madam Chair, my name is Diana McEwen, and I'm the Metro CERT Director. And just a response to Senator Higgins with regards to the amount of money. We were, for the past 4 years, from 07 to, help me do the math, 2011, our funding was directed out of the Renewable Development Fund, and 07 was first put into the governor's budget to be directed out of the Renewable Development Fund. And last year, when that conversation came up because of the report, this fund, the SIP R&D fund, was identified as an alternative once the moratorium was put on the Renewable Development Fund. And when we were funded out of the Renewable Development Fund, we actually got $625,000 per year. So last year when this was identified, it was a cut for us. We've gone out and we've leveraged. We've got some foundation grants. We got a USDA REAP grant. And so this is not our entire budget. We do it helps our core. There's about 7 FTEs out of our 18 staff that are funded through this fund. But we do leverage this money to go out and get other dollars to support our work, some specific programs around solar and other things.
You were mentioning that there was a program between the renters and the landlords, and what do you hope evolves from that? This is some sort of study, but what would be the hoped result?
Madam Chair, members of the committee, so that's a project that's happening. There are, I think, 3 different lead partners on that effort. And what they're trying to figure out is how to help utilities better tailor their rebate dollars and how to develop programming that would then help, step up energy efficiency for that audience. Right now, there are lots of rebates that target residential customers, and there are lots of rebates that target commercial customers. But that sort of multifamily dwelling, it's hard to tell, is that a commercial business, you know, because it's a rental, or is that really a residential kind of rebate? And so what they're trying to figure out is how do you provide the right mix of incentives and programmatic guidance to be able to improve energy efficiency in those, you know, apartment buildings.
Do other members have questions? Senator Magnus, is there anyone else who wants to testify for or against the bill? Then Senator Magnus.
Madam Chair, I would move Senate File 2216. What's your desire, Madam Chair, to go to the general quarters or go to the floor? Or
where have you been?
Senate calendar. We came from the Energy Committee. From the Energy Committee.
No, I've been wondering that.
I don't know if you want to just put it on the consent calendar, Madam Chair. I don't know of any opposition to this.
We have the consent calendar.
The consent calendar.
I don't know.
It'll
whatever
help
you
us.
Whatever you want.
Okay, we could try that one.
I don't know. We have not had any opposition, Madam Chair. To the House. So I don't know.
Okay, on Senator Magnus's motion that Senate File 2216 as amended be recommended to pass and be placed on the consent calendar. All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. All opposed, nay. The motion does prevail. The bill will be placed on the consent calendar.
Thank you very much.
Nice.
Thank you, Senator Magnus.
$500,000 on the consent calendar.
We've only sent, this is the first bill we've sent out to the consent calendar all year. You better prove that it's worthy of it. If it gets called back, we won't do that again.
Good work, Senator
Magnus.
Good
sign, Senator
Our
Carlson.
Next bill
is
Senate File 1553, Senator Carlson. We're switching from energy to dentists.
Really?
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. I am Senator John Carlson, District 4. With me today is Mr. Dominic Spicetto. We're here to talk to you about the Minnesota Mission of Mercy program. This is a wonderful program that's going to take place in Minnesota for the first time in Mankato this August. What this does is it brings in thousands of dentists and hygienists from around the state into the Verizon Center in Mankato, where they'll treat over 1,000, probably well over 1,000, maybe I don't know how many, people that with dental needs, regardless of financial ability to pay. So they don't look at insurance, they don't look at your ability to pay. If you have a dental need and want to come and have dental work, they have a triage area set up. From the triage area, then you get sent to either maybe you need some teeth cleaning, maybe you need some cavity work, whatever it is. And the reason we're in front of your committee, Madam Chair, I believe is because originally there was a pretty hefty fiscal note. We have since been working with the Board of Dentistry, and we believe we've resolved the issue with the amendment that I think is now being passed out. I don't even have a number on it.
It is the A3.
The A3 amendment. What the A3 amendment would do, Madam Chair, would be to put this license into a category that already exists so that there's no need for a whole revamping of their computer system and programming. So it would just fall under a category that already exists and would set up this guest license for a period of 15 days where someone from out of state that's duly licensed in their state under their Board of Dentistry would be able to come in, practice their dentistry for this particular Mission of Mercy for us here. And the board would need to have a small charge to kind of cover their costs. They have to do a little background check to make sure that they are in fact duly licensed in their state, so we don't have people sneaking in and trying to do dentistry that maybe they're auto mechanics, whatever. So there's a small fee. Typically, what will happen is the sponsoring dental group will probably just pay those fees because these dentists and hygienists come in from these other states and from around the state, and they come in at their expense. So they're paying their own way, paying their own freight, coming in and doing a couple days of dentistry. It's a wonderful program. And I think maybe we should go ahead and move the amendment before we...
We certainly can. Senator Stump, we'll move the A3. You know, maybe Mr. Sposetto knows this, but do other states charge a fee to have people come in for free services? I mean, it seems kind of a shame to me. They're already putting themselves out to do this and serve our residents and...
Madam Chairman, Dominic Spizzetto representing the Minnesota Dental Association. We are not the first state to do this. This is a program that's, I believe, been initiated in now 18 states. And again, the majority of the dentists will be from Minnesota doing work here. But the program is a national program, and they like to bring people in from other states so that they can learn about the program and then take it back to their state. And also, we're always excited of having dentists from Iowa and Wisconsin and other states work because our dentists have worked with them on their program. To answer your question, we've looked at 18 of those states, and there's only two that charge a fee. Most of this is not expected to have a payment at all. We had a dispute with the Board of Dentistry about a fiscal note, started out at $40,000 to change their programming. And to put this into context, we're estimating that we'll have maybe 10 to 12 dentists from out of the state come in and do this. So we're talking, based on the $25 request that the board has asked, we're talking about $250 to $300. It always seems a bit de minimis to us. We don't think it's appropriate to have the dentist pay for it, so we as an organization told the board and the legislature that we'd just pay the fee. If you need a fee, we'll pay it. We don't think it's necessary, but I'll let the board make the case for that, the process that they have. In other states, it's basically just showing, filling out a form and showing that you have a license and good standing in another state, and that seems to suffice to allow you to come in and practice totally free for a couple of days in that state.
Senator Bonoff, did you have a question?
Madam Chair, Senator Carlson, in their special revenue fund created by the current licensing fees of the dentists, is there a surplus? I know most of the health licensing boards seem to carry a little bit in the positive, and wouldn't that just be enough to deal with these incidental costs?
Senator Carlson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Senator Bonoff, I probably would refer that question to the Board of Dentistry. I see where you're going, and I would it would be wonderful if we could pass this without a fee, but I think maybe we'll.
Please identify yourself.
Madam Chair, my name is Marshall Schrag. I'm the Executive Director of the Minnesota Board of Dentistry. And Madam Chair, Senator Bonoff, I appreciate the question and the concern about the fee. In light of the volunteer service that's being provided, it's been something that our board has given considerable attention to. And the concern is that this is not specifically for the Mission of Mercy project. It opens up the possibility of any volunteer program with unknown numbers of participants. And there actually is, as a matter of public protection, a process that that our board engages in reviewing an application and ensuring, as was indicated, that the individual is appropriately licensed in another jurisdiction. And then there's a process involved in actually printing and mailing that certificate. So the costs that we currently have in statute for guest licensure are not to exceed $75. We do have guest licensure provisions that are utilized. The board does charge a $50 fee for those. We think that under the circumstances that a reduced fee is reasonable to request, and we've determined that $25 is actually the dollar amount of processing that application. And I think that it's reasonable that if an organization establishes an activity or an event, that it's not the board that has the burden of responsibility for managing the costs of that, that would be something that reasonably falls upon the individuals or the organization involved.
Senator
Madam
Anna?
Chair, follow up on to that. Is it Dr. Schrag or Mr. Schrag?
It's Mr.
Okay, thanks.
It's Marshall.
Mr. Schrag, as you know, I've been pretty involved with the health licensing boards this past year, and we put language in our sunset commission bill that actually says no longer can the state take from those special revenue funds, and I'm getting some pushback from it, and I'm going to fight hard to keep that from happening. But on the same side of that, it seems appropriate, given that we're going to take that strong stand to protect you and your dentist from feeling as though they're paying these fees and then we're using those fees to balance the budget, because that just doesn't seem appropriate nor fair. But it does seem to me that on a case-by-case basis, you as a board could then say, well, we do have that extra money. You know, we'd like to cover this cost, and it doesn't seem appropriate to go back to the state. And that's where I net out on this particular one. I would never vote against this bill for Senator Carlson because it's obviously a great bill, but I don't think it's the right choice for you. Given I know there is that money in there, for you to come back and say the state ought to do that. And in terms of opening it up on a more expansive basis, well, if you make that decision as a board, you'll get to decide when you come to the state and when you don't. So I would ask you to reconsider this one.
Madam Chair, Senator Bonoff, back to your original question, which is whether our board in particular has a reserve or surplus available. We do not. We anticipate that we will in the future, but we do not at this point in time. And so it is of concern, and I think that the language that we've agreed upon in the A3 amendment does indicate that the board would charge a fee not to exceed the $25. So there would be room for determination based upon whether we were in a position at that time to be able to agree to a lower or no fee.
Madam Chair. Senator Carlson, what's your pleasure? Do you want to just leave your bill as is, or do you want an amendment to say that the board would, for this particular program, absorb the fee?
Senator Carlson.
Madam Chair and Senator Bonoff, at the I may need to work with the Board of Dentistry in the future, but I certainly wouldn't want to draw their ire, but I would certainly prefer to see that there's no charge, as you would.
Yeah.
Mr. Sposetto, how you said your organization was willing just to pay the fee, and how do you raise your funds? Where do you get them from?
Madam Chairman, for this particular program, we've been doing some significant fundraising. We received contributions from dentists around the state. Delta Dental Plans of Minnesota has given us $150,000. The equipment that we use is donated by this organization, the Mission of Mercy. So we're in good shape to put this program on in Mankato, and we're hoping to be able to do it again in Bemidji next year. So we are not having difficulty raising money to support this program. And this sort of $300 is such a minimal amount that it's more of a nuisance than anything else. We would prefer that there is no fee, to be honest, but in working with the board and they and their sense that they have duties to comply with in terms of determining that these people are actually licensed in other states, they need some processing charge. So we're willing to pay that, and frankly, we would donate it directly to the board, but the board tells me they can't accept money from us unless it's in the law that it's a required fee or assessment. So it's all crazy to me as well, and frankly quite frustrating.
Well, it's certainly better for the nonprofit to pay the fee than to ask the guest dentists and hygienists to do that when they're coming here on their own dime to provide free services.
Madam Chair, I
suppose in order to keep peace in the valley, Senator Carlson.
Well, I would just offer that it does look a little bad, as Mr. Sposetto pointed out, that 18 states are doing this, and 2 out of 18 states charge a fee. It sort of takes that feeling of Minnesota nice out of a program.
Are there any other comments, Senator Bonner?
Madam Chair, so
it's all in
on you. Right. So I would on the A3 amendment.
Move to reconsider.
I would move to reconsider.
We didn't adopt.
Oh,
it
we
yet.
Didn't adopt it. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
So I could use some help from council, but I would prefer to move to delete the fee not to exceed $25 and really delete most of that thing, because it says that in the original bill that there is no charge.
Senator Bonner, I think one of the reasons there's a fee is something to do with their programming issue. So I'm wondering if we could say something about the fee, who the fee may be paid by.
Mm.
If there would be money in the fund, it could be paid by the fund. Otherwise, if we don't want a fee, we just have to leave the amendment. We wouldn't adopt the amendment.
Yeah.
But I don't understand the issue with the programming. I know at first this had a very large fiscal note because it would require some major reprogramming of their system to do with licensing. So maybe Mr. Strike could explain that.
Madam Chair, certainly the initial fiscal note indicated that in order to create a new type of licensure, which was initially requested, we do have to use the programming of the system that we have, and there's significant charges of $15,000 to $40,000 to create a new license type.
Right.
And so we were able to work with interested parties to coordinate this so that it would be within the existing guest licensure provision that we have. So we don't have that additional programming that's required. Right now we're just looking at the fees that are being addressed as strictly to meet the costs of the board in processing and issuing the license. I know that we all agree this is a good bill. It's a good thing to do.
Yeah.
And we are frustrated about the time that's being spent and the energy expended to address this. I'm concerned also that by not passing this, that we'll end up in a conference committee and be back talking about this again instead of just resolving it and moving forward. So,
Senator Carlson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I suspect that the House author would have preferred to see this move forward without a fee, and I would guess
That's
that
correct.
If we pass this without a fee on it, that they would adopt the Senate version and not go to a conference committee, so that would expedite the process.
Senator Bonner,
so, Madam
what,
Chair,
what was the name of that fund? We could say
it's
something
the special
like,
revenue fund for the health licensing boards.
Could we say the fee may be paid by the applicant, the appropriate name for the fund, or the sponsoring organization? And then if, with the indication that, you know, if they have the money available, we'd like to see them pay for it. It may not force them to pay for it, but if the money isn't in their account, that it is an option.
Well, Madam Chair, the other option is just not to adopt the A3. Is there some reason, Madam Chair, that you prefer to adopt the A3?
Well, Senator Bonoff, I just know that this has been a contentious issue, and I want to make sure it gets done. And so I want to make sure that those licenses are issued so the guest dentist can come in and work. And it needs to be done in time for the program this summer. Senator Carlson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Perhaps we could resolve this with a simple amendment that would, instead of the license fee, as I understand, there's not a concern about the Mission of Mercy program. Maybe we should be specific about the Mission of Mercy program so that we, because I do understand the board's position that if all of a sudden we open up where there's things going on and there's hundreds and hundreds of dentists wanting to come into the state because of this guest license fee, that would be very problematic, and it would be problematic for the board, and I would want to protect that. My understanding is that right now if we do another Mission of Mercy, maybe it'd be once a year, maybe a couple times a year at the most going forward. I wonder if the department would, if the board would be agreeable to taking the fee off and being very more specific about the Mission of Mercy, and if that would alleviate some of those concerns.
Mr. Stragg, do you want to comment on that at all?
Senator Roebling, Madam Chair, the board has not taken a position with regard specifically to the Mission of Mercy. That is the program that was presented, and the board was supportive of that program and of the language that was presented. The only concern had to do with managing the fees and a fairness of charging fees for every other application that that comes to the board. So, you know, whether you want to limit it to this program, that's certainly a policy decision of the legislature, and it doesn't affect the board's position at all.
Mr. Spilsetto, do you have much experience with other dentists coming from other states? Would there be any other purpose for them to come here? I imagine they, you know, a border dentist could apply for the short-term dental license and cross back and forth on occasion if we have this.
Madam Chair, first of all, we already have a guest license, which allows a dentist from a bordering state, and we're actually expanding that so it would be any state in the United States to come here and practice for compensation and work here on an unlimited basis under the guest licensing program that the board already has. That's the one there where you get the $50 fee. What we're talking about is creating a special class within that guest license on a very limited basis. So in order to get this license, you would have to agree to provide without compensation and for a period of less than 10 days. I can tell you in my experience that there are not dentists coming out of the woodwork to go anywhere to provide free dental care. So I don't think it's going to be an issue where we're going to have hundreds of dentists coming here to do this. They can go to 18 other states that have passed this legislation if they chose to do it. It's an organized program. We solicit the dentist. It's not, I don't think there's another program like this in existence that I'm aware of. And if there is, and if they're willing to do this 10-day free dental care, I don't see it as a problem. Frankly, I think we could encourage it. I'm not sure we're going to have tons of dentists do it, though. So, Madam Chair, in my experience, this is not a huge issue, other than it's related to this particular program.
What is the will of the members?
Well,
Senator Bonner.
Madam Chair, if we were to include the board shall not assess a fee for the guest license for volunteer services issued under this paragraph, and then some, you know, at one include a fourth, the applicant is providing services in the Mission of Mercy program.
Senate Counsel, do we typically name a specific program? It's probably not done.
Madam Chair, I'm not familiar with too many other instances where we do that. The other thing I'd point out is if the organization decides to change its name at some point in the future or anything like that, you'd need to amend the statutes to accommodate that.
Mr. Spilzetto.
Madam Chairman, just my particular thought on this. If we were to go forward with this legislation without a fee, and it turned out that there were significant numbers of other programs, or that the Mission of Mercy itself exceeded the 10, 12 dentists that we're talking about, which I doubt, the board could come back to the legislature and request some sort of an appropriation for that. And I'm sure the dentist, or not the dentist in this case, but the sponsoring organization would be happy to pay that fee.
So are we suggesting that we simply don't adopt this amendment? Senator Stump?
Madam Chair, I would respectfully retract my motion.
Madam Chair, in my area, we've got what they call Apple Tree Dental out of Holly, Minnesota, and they serve the low-income in the area. I think they've even got a van that goes around to some of the nursing homes. And then at the Community and Technical College in Moorhead, they have a dental program, and in the evenings, the dentists will come in there and serve those people. Now, statewide, are there these type of programs so the whole state is kind of covered, or is it kind of hit and miss where some areas have this service and some do not? Or I was just wondering if the state is covered so that all the people could have some access.
Mr. Spilzetto.
Madam Chairman, Senator Lanxess, unfortunately it's hit and miss, but we do have programs throughout the state. And the differentiation between those programs and this is, one, they're Minnesota licensed dentists, so they don't need any additional purview or authority from the Board of Dentistry. And second of all, even though the dentist is volunteering their services in these clinics, the clinics themselves are billing the state for medical assistance in Minnesota care. And even though the reimbursement is woefully inadequate, at least there is some money that is changing hands here. The Mission of Mercy is totally free to anyone. No questions asked. You don't need to be on Minnesota care or Medicaid. If you're willing to wait in line to get this care, we will provide it. So this is a very unique program. But again, the programs that you allude to are volunteer dentist programs. We are having some discussions with the Department of Human Services because they are trying to curtail some of those. So we've been sort of pushing back to make sure we can continue those programs to exist. But I think it's a different setup.
Well, Madam Chair, why would they be trying to curtail them?
Well, I hate to get into another issue, but since we're here and it may pop up, they have determined in many cases these volunteer dentists have chosen not to be enrolled providers in the Minnesota Care or MA program. They just decided not to do medical assistance because of the reimbursement or the paperwork or whatever. But yet they're willing to go in and volunteer and do it at a different location where it doesn't affect their practice and their overhead. We've been told recently by the department that they don't believe they can provide payment for that because they're not providing, they're not members, enrolled providers in the program. Even though the clinic itself is a provider, the individual dentist doing the treatment isn't. So we're trying to go into, and we've reached some agreement apparently with the department that they will allow us to get some sort of registration number that we're going to be providing volunteer care without having to go through the rigmarole of being in the Medicaid program and having to go follow Rule 101, which requires you to see so many Medicaid patients and have restrictions on your own practice and how you can schedule and what you can do. So we have got to the point where I think we've worked that out. And fortunately, they tell us, because we're dealing with programs that are already existing, this change won't require a fiscal note. So we're redoing the program so it'll work, and hopefully we can encourage more dentists to do that.
You know, the Legislative Audit Commission yesterday chose reimbursement for dental services as one of the evaluation topics for the coming year, because we know that there's a lot of discussion around that issue. So we'll probably get a very thorough report on that next year as to, you know, the practices that are being used to take care of people's dental needs in the low-income communities. And will probably address exactly the issue you're talking about. It sounds like you may have worked out part of the solution for that, however. Mr. Strake?
Madam Chair, just to Senator Langsa's question, too, with regard to the program in Moorhead, and that actually was the program that initiated the development of the guest licensure provisions 9-10 years ago, and there was a need for the developing community clinic in Moorhead to solicit dentists, hygienists, and assistants from over in Fargo, and at that time, they would have had to apply for full licensure in the state. We established guest licensure provisions, and the legislature at that time said, let's do this for bordering states in the event that somebody from Wisconsin might want to practice across the border, Superior, Duluth, or some other in the southern part of the state with Iowa dentists. And so those are the dentists or dental providers right now that have the fee not to exceed $75 that we do currently charge $50 for.
Senator Higgins?
Madam Chair, I was looking on the A3 amendment, and it looks like the last line of it isn't related to the $25 fee, and it's changing paragraph to subdivision. Should that be something that we
continue with?
Continue.
Shall we divide the amendment?
No, Madam Chair, I'll just move that on line 2.30, we change the word paragraph to subdivision.
Any other questions on that?
Madam Chair.
Senator Carlson.
Thank you, Senator Higgins, for that offer. I think in looking at my A3, it would be lines 1.7, 1.8, and 1.9, and 1.10 that would all be, that should be changed, that are irrespective of the fee. But you're better at that than I am, so.
Madam Chair and Senator Carlson, the 1.8 and 9, that deleted language there actually got put up on 2.2 and 2.3. It just got moved.
This was all brought to.
On the original bill. So it was in both places. Guest licenses expire each year, and then it's guest license may be renewed each year. I guess it's the same thing, different language. So I don't know that we need those, and I don't. Yeah, I was looking at those too, and I. Mm-hmm.
Senate Council may have a comment.
Yeah.
Madam Chair, maybe I can help out here. There was language in the, if you see the language related to, on the bill itself, page 2, lines 25 and 26, that say a guest license under this paragraph may be renewed annually. We actually had added additional language that it would expire at December 31st of each year. So technically speaking, it's not necessarily annually because you could apply for it in September, get the license, and have it expire in December. So we just thought that language was probably not appropriate. So we get rid of the term annual, and once we put in that language saying it expires December 31st, we didn't need the annual language at all. So that's just a technical correction. Either way, it doesn't matter, but I think it's more consistent with what we did in the full committee in the Health and Human Services.
Okay, Madam Chair. So
Senator Higgins, we could move
Lines
1.7 through 1.10.
On the A3 amendment, I'll move lines 7 through 10.
Any other comments on that motion? If not, all in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, nay. The motion does prevail. The amendment is adopted. And it appears that it is not the intent of this committee to adopt a fee. Senator Carlson, if you want to try it on the floor, I really just don't think you're going to get it out of this particular group. So,
no, Madam Chair and members, you made my day. Maybe perhaps not Mr. Schrags, but.
If not, Senator Stumpf moves that Senate File 1553, as amended, be recommended to pass and placed on general orders. All in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. All opposed, nay. The motion does prevail. The bill will be placed on Senate on general orders as amended.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members.
Thank you. Our next bill up is Senate File 1791. Senator DeCryf, welcome to our committee.
Thank you, Madam Chair and committee. Senate File 1791 is a bill that was brought to me by the Minnesota Automobile Dealers Association, and I'd like to offer the A2 amendment.
The A2 amendment will be distributed. It is not in our packet. Senator DeCryf, it doesn't look like there will be much left of your bill.
Madam Chair, I think you're correct. And along with deleting sections 2, 3, and 4, we would eliminate the fiscal note. So,
thank you.
So, is that mainly what the amendment does then, is eliminate the fiscal note?
Yes, Madam Chair, I believe the reason that we were directed to your committee is because there was a fiscal note, and we determined that there may be a different way to get sections 2, 3, and 4 done. So we felt the best thing to do with this bill would be to just eliminate them from this bill. And thus eliminating the fiscal note and try to move this bill forward, which should be pretty much uncontested at that point.
So Senator Ingebrigtsen moves the A2 amendment. Are there any questions? If not, Senator Ingebrigtsen.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So the dollars that are in the fiscal note are going to disappear, and they were how much?
It was like 7,500
or 17,500?
24,000.
So how is that going to be taken care of? Can you explain? Can you explain to me what the amendment?
Yeah, the thought process is to get it into a transportation omnibus bill, where the fiscal note would be absorbed and pretty much, in a larger bill. $24,000 wouldn't amount to very much. Where a standalone bill, it's an issue.
Sure.
So it can balance out in a larger omnibus bill. Okay. Any other questions? Otherwise, all in favor of Senator Ingebrigtsen's motion to adopt the A2 amendment, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, nay. The motion does prevail. The amendment is adopted. Then to the bill, Senator DeCryf.
Well, essentially, what the bill does is it's a bill that the Minnesota Automobile Dealers Association brought to us just to help clean up some language. And, for this committee, the fiscal note, I think, was the issue. So I don't know that there's much more work really to do on this bill in this committee.
Can you just give us a quick overview of what's left?
About 10 words.
I'll ask a representative from the Dealers Association to...
Good morning.
Hi, Madam Chair, members of the committee. My name is Alyssa Shalander. I'm with the Minnesota Auto Dealers Association. The remainder of the bill just takes care of a couple of regulatory streamlining issues that we'd like to take care of this year. Section 1 has to do with an optional program for expediting title processing for our customers. It was a program that we created in conjunction with the Deputy Registrars and the Department of Driver and Vehicle Services maybe 7 years ago. And all it does is it just allows us, currently we're required to put the license plate on the vehicle at the same time as the vehicle is sold if you use this optional expedited title processing system. All we're asking for is a little bit of flexibility as if, with respect to not having to plate the vehicle on the same day as the vehicle is sold. And the reason being is that we've got some dealers who would like to offer this service to their customers, but having to plate the vehicle on the same day as the vehicle is sold means that they don't have the flexibility that they need to provide the security for the inventory of license plates that they'd like to have. So if they have a couple of days, they feel like they can better secure their inventory of plates and registration stickers by keeping them back in the back office where the accountants have locks and keys, and they just feel more comfortable with with keeping their inventory that way. And then finally, the last section of the bill that's left has to do with allowing dealers to obtain a lien release from a lien holder that they can no longer locate if a lien has been perfected, longer than 7 years. So it's a provision in statute that already exists for individuals. When an individual has paid off their loan and they need a lien release, but they can't locate the lien holder to get the actual lien release, the individual can currently send a request by certified mail, return receipt requested, and then they can present that as evidence to the department that they can get a clean title. All this bill does is it allows dealers to do that on behalf of our customers so that we don't have to tell the customer to go track down their own lien release, that we can just do that for them.
Thank you. Is there anyone who wants to testify for or against the bill? Any other questions from the members? If not, Senator Olson moves that Senate File 1791 as amended be recommended to pass and placed on general orders. All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. All opposed, nay. The motion does prevail. Senate File 1791 will be placed on general orders. And with that, members, that's our last bill of the day. And we will be meeting tomorrow morning. We have a full agenda tomorrow. If it takes longer than our regularly scheduled time, we may have to meet after session. But we hopefully can move through it. But we just had a glut of bills come last week at the end of the week, moved it into finance, and so we have to try and deal with those. Senator Ingebrigtsen?
Madam Chair, when will they be posted on the schedule?
I think they went up. Wednesdays are up already.
Okay.
And I think Thursdays are up, too. We are going to plan on meeting Friday as well. Those have not been posted yet, but we'll try and get those up as soon as possible. With that, the meeting is adjourned.